1 Corinthians 13. I want to illustrate my message tonight. I want to ask you how much of a blessing this would be to you. Are you getting any help from that? It'd be good to have a piano and a bass and a lead guitar and this. Well, that's about what Paul's talking about here. Not exactly, but I'll tell you one thing. That's an irritating sound. There's no good in that. It's worse than nothing. I want to try to start a message. I doubt if I finish it. I want to try and preach on good for nothing. Begin reading in verse 1. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become as a sounding brass, or my little feeble illustration, a tinkling cymbal. It means a loud crashing noise. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains. Now listen to what he's saying. If I have all these things, the faith that I could remove mountains and have not charity or love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, love, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. Did not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own. Is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth. Beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Charity never faileth, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. Right in the middle of a book full of trouble, there's an oasis planted. Paul is writing to the second most carnal church in the New Testament. Well, you ought to see it. Church is worse than them, but probably not by far. He begins the writing dealing with problems, and the first one he deals with is the division, which is a lack of love. And the verse before this, up until the end of the 12th chapter, he deals with trouble after trouble, problem after problem, issue after issue. And then he begins in chapter 14 again with the trouble. And right in the middle of all that, chapter 13 is like a breath of fresh air in the middle of pollution. And he talks about love, and he is encouraging them and us to love. And he says, in essence, all the things that I just read, but he says, in essence, if I give everything I have and I don't have love, it is useless. It is good for nothing. It's like that clanging noise. It really is worse than nothing. And in essence, it's talking about the fact that if you could get everything you own and every cent that you have and would go and buy some what you think would be gold, and you exhaust your bank account, you sell your house, you sell your car, you sell everything except the clothes on your back, and you spend it all on this gold, and then you realize it's fool's gold. It's not what you thought. That's kind of what Paul's talking about. All these things that the Corinthians were doing, some good things, were nothing. And they thought they had everything. And it's just like a clanging cymbal. It's like just beating a drum. And this is a wonderful chapter if you just read it. But if you put it in the context of the Scripture, it's even better. I want to say that he says, without love, it all adds up to zero. In the midst of all that he's talking about, he says, love is necessary. I'm going to mention first the perception of love. He's talking about to these people and to us about this thing called love, because they needed to know, and so do we need to know, what in the world is it? I promise you, this world has no idea what love is, not real love. This world doesn't have the foggiest idea. We talk about we love books, and we love baseball, and we love songs, and we love our spouse, and all these things, and we use the word love. And I ask you, what in the world is love? He calls it charity. And when we think about charity, we think about a soup line or giving to the Red Cross or making a donation to some charity. But that's not what this word charity means, even though it could be included. That word means love. Now, we who speak English, we are somewhat limited in this subject. We have one word, and we say, I love Pintos, I love the Lord, I love football, and you have to go by the context of the conversation to discern what does it mean. But the Greeks weren't like that. They had more than four words, but four words are centered on as far as what the Greeks used for what we have as our one word, love. The first word that they had was the word eros, and it's nowhere in the Bible. This is the physical attraction. This is what we might call sensual. This might be the kind of love that's related to the marriage bed, that kind of thing, and it's not anywhere in the New Testament. Not that it's wrong in the marriage occasion, but it certainly would be wrong outside of. But the word love, the Greeks use, the Jews use, eros. There's also a Greek word that is storge. That's a family love. I love my wife. I love my husband. I love my youngest. I love my grandchildren. And that's a Greek word that's used. It's the kind of love that the mother has for the baby and the brother has for the sister sometimes. And it's the one that we find so many times in our world. But again, it's not found in the Bible either. And then there's a Greek word, phileo, which means friendship. The word Philadelphia came from that word, phileo. And it means a friendship. And that's what we find in Romans 12:10, where it says, be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. And then there's a Greek word, agape. I'm just kind of pouring the foot in here. We'll get to building in just a minute. Agape is the word love that we found in John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. And that's the kind of love that we want to center on. It's the highest level of love. It does not mean romantic love, and it really doesn't really mean too much of an emotional love. It has a sacrificial element to it. God so loved that he gave. His love motivated him to give, to sacrifice. And even with the husbands and the wives, that word is not used. If you find where it talks about husbands love your wives, it's talking about not a romantic love, but it's a sacrificial love. So all that being said, love is not so much as far as the Bible love and the love that Paul's talking about. It's not something that's really emotional. Oh, I just fell in love. For love at first sight. Well, sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't. But the kind of love that Paul deals with, and I want to try and deal with, is the godly love. The kind of love that God has. That's why he says in John 14:15, if you love me, keep my commandments. You see, this kind of love is not an emotion. We don't feel wiggly inside. It's not that kind of love. It's a kind of love that moves us to action. And that's the kind of love that God the Father had when he sent his Son. And that's the kind of love that Jesus had when he came to this world and gave himself for us. And he said, if you say you love me, show it, demonstrate it by doing what I say. That's the kind of love we're talking about, a demonstrated love. John 15, 9, as the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. And he doesn't stop. Continue ye in my love. He said, the Father loved me and I have loved you. Now you go in love like we have. Use the example, that portrait of Christ, where we see what he did and how he loved while he was in this world. And yet, since he's been gone back to heaven, he sends the Holy Spirit to convict us and now to aid us and to help us. That's all because of his love. And 1 Corinthians 13 is God's definition of love. I mentioned first the perception of love. What in the world does love mean? Not this fleshly thing. Not even the brother thing. Not the self thing, but the sacrificial thing. The giving, the action word of showing, not just saying, but showing. If your husband tells you, I love you, or if your wife tells you, I love you, and they don't demonstrate it, you have reason to wonder if they really do. And God says, don't just tell it, show it. The perception of love, but then next, the permanence of love. Look in verse 8 and notice what it says. Charity never faileth. Love never ends. It literally means to cease or to stop. Love is the one thing, as far as what Paul's talking about, that will never end. And if you read on in that verse, he talks about, but whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. There'll come a time when preaching's not needed. I really do hate that. Maybe the Lord will let me have a Sunday school class when we get to heaven. I don't know. But there'll be a time when we get to heaven when the prophecies and the preaching and the teaching and the speaking forth that we might learn from each other will be gone. He says, whether there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. And of course, this is talking about the tongues. It's talked about in Acts 2. And he's talking here about one thing, not just heaven, but he's talking about the ending of the scripture and how there'll be a time when these things will end. But love never ends. Look in verse 13. And now abideth faith, hope, charity. These three. But the greatest of these is charity. The permanence of love, it won't end. Faith one day will end. When we get to heaven, we'll need no faith other than just saying, I know the Lord's going to take care of me now. We won't have any doubt. We won't have any question. We won't have to pray to the Lord and believe him to take care of us when we get to heaven. Faith will be replaced by sight. We will see it then, experience it then. There'll come a time when faith ends. Abideth faith, hope. Hope is an expectation of what's going to happen, an expectation that things are going to end well. And there'll come a time when that kind of hope will end. Because we will know for sure that the future is set and everything's fine. But he says, in spite of the fact that one day faith will end and hope will end, love will never end. We will love then like we've never loved before. And we will see and experience and enjoy his love like we never have before. Because we'll see it with new minds and fresh bodies. And we'll enjoy his love. It's a permanent thing. It's a everlasting thing. It's a never-ending thing. And that tells us that the next thing, the prominence of love. Not just the perception. What in the world is it? Not just the permanence. What it is going to be forever. But the prominence of love. Again, it says in verse 13, and now abideth faith, hope, and charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity. The greatest of these is charity. Did you hear what he said that I read? If I can speak with tongues of men and angels, if I give my body to be burned, if I give this, if I do that, if I'm able to do this, if I have faith that I can move mountains, if I have all these things and I don't have charity, I'm like a clanging noise. I'm like a big, irritating noise. I'm worse than nothing. And that's why he says in chapter 12, verse 31 of 1 Corinthians, but covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way. He says to the church, now there's nothing wrong with you as a church wanting God to bless you with the best spiritual gifts. There is nothing wrong with you desiring God to bless your church and give you people that will serve the Lord and love the Lord and gifted people and enabled people and empowered people. There's nothing wrong with that. Desire it, pray for it, go after it. But he says, I'll show you something better, to love. Do you get the point? He says love is better. The prominence of love is greater than any of these things. It's greater than all of these things. It can accomplish more. It can do good. A word of love can help somebody that's discouraged. An act of love can encourage somebody that's just about ready to quit and give them stamina and a desire to keep on going. A word or act of love, a gift of love, showing of love can take somebody who's on the way down, just about ready to get out of church and quit God, the encouragement they need to keep on going. That word, that act, that living of love, that makes a difference. There's a prominence. It's important. It does more than anything else. Encourage the discouraged to not give up. Provide for the needy what they need. And the lack of love can do more damage than we can imagine. It can devastate. It can discourage the discouraged. It can leave the needy needy. It can hurt those that we don't think about what we're saying to. I'm talking about the prominence of love. It makes a difference. It can build up, and the lack of can build down, tear up. And then I want to look lastly at the portrait of love, the perception of love. What is it? Well, God tells us in these verses. The permanence of love, it'll never end, which tells us how important it is. The prominence of love is more important than anything and all things that you can do. Without love, you can't replace anything doing good, giving, going. Without love, it's empty. Clang, 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 clang. But then the portrait of love, I want to know what it is. I am a visual person. I can read stuff 100 times, and it just doesn't seem to register. But if I can see a video or somebody saying, here's how you do it, it clicks. I can understand that. Well, I want to see a portrait of love, a picture of love. And who will we look at? Jesus, of course. He's the portrait of love. He's the example. You know what a portrait is? You look at that portrait, you look at that picture, and you see the person who's been painted. And sometimes, if it's a good artist, they can show their emotions, they can show their personality in the portrait. They can show that person and what they're like. And that's what we find with Jesus and him showing that he loves and what love is. John 15:9, as the Father have loved me, so have I loved you. I said it already. Continue in my love. He said, the Father loved me, and I have loved you, and now you do what I've done. You look at my portrait, you look at me, and you'll see love. You look at my life as an example of love. While I lived in this world, before I lived in this world, and since I left this world, I have shown love. If you want to know what love is, if you want an example, if you want a portrait, look at me, look at the Lord, he says. And that's what we need to do. We're supposed to be like Jesus. And Jesus did not go around being moved by his feelings. Now, there's no doubt he had feelings. He looked at Jerusalem, that place who had stoned the prophets. The Father had sent prophets of that place to those people, and they had stoned them and killed them and rejected them and laughed at them and mocked them. And now Jesus walking the earth, he doesn't say, "You got what you deserve." He said, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou which stonest the prophets and killeth them which are sent of thee, how all would I have gathered you together just like a mama hen." He showed love to people who did not deserve it. He loved people who didn't love him. The portrait of love is Jesus. Our example of how we should love is on him and in his life. He proved, no doubt, that he loved, and we should also. You know, one of the things, in fact, this may be the only time the Lord really described about himself, is where he said this, "I am meek and lowly in heart." He revealed himself as somebody who was humble, caring, not demanding his own way. He did not come to be ministered to, but to minister and give his life a ransom. He came not for himself. That's not love. He came for me and for you. And to do good, he worked himself. I use this figuratively. He worked himself to death helping people. When he was tired and weary and had no sleep, when he was hungry and thirsty, he still went. He still helped. He still reached out. He still healed. And he knew the more he healed, the worse it would get on him physically. But he still did it because he loved. It says in Matthew 12:20, "A bruised reed shall he not break, and a smoking flax shall he not quench." I preached on this several times, not just here, in other places. A bruised reed is an old reed out in the field that's been bruised, and that one place where it's bruised is so weak, it's just about to tip over. One little gentle breeze, one person walking by and brushing it, will make it break the rest of the way. And it is said of Jesus, if he sees somebody like that, who has been bruised or who is weak, just about to fall, just about to fail, just about to go down, most people would say they're not worth messing with. Most people say, go ahead, they're getting what they deserve, but not Jesus. He cares for the weak. He loved the weak. And it says there, a smoking flax shall he not quench. That smoking flax is that wick where the oil has no longer been drawn up into it. And it's not just not burning, now it's smoking. And that's not only not giving light, that's irritating. You folks who know about kerosene lanterns, you know when that thing smokes, it is so irritating. There's no light for one thing, but then the smoke makes you breathe it in, and it's bad. And he said that smoking flax, which most people say, get rid of it. Put that thing out. It's not giving any light. It's no good. It's irritating. He says, oh, no, 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 no. Let's get it burning again. And that person who is so irritating, don't even like to be around them. Most people say, I ain't messing with them. I'm running. They own one aisle at Walmart, and I'm going to the other. I'll avoid them at any cost. Not Jesus. He loved even the irritating. Jesus is our portrait. He's our example. And I want to say before I go on, I'm amazed that he loved me. I'm amazed that he loved me when he went to the cross. He did have me on his mind. And he did have you on his mind. And you ain't much different than me. None of us deserve his love. None of us deserve his compassion. But he loved us anyway. And I'm glad he loved us back then. But I'm glad he loved me 46 years ago when he chased me down and saved me. But I'm glad he loved me because I got up this morning and is almost in my right mind. I was able to come to church twice today. And hopefully tomorrow I'll be able to get to heaven or go home, get up and live another day. Because he loves me. He not only loved me then, he continues to love me. He's showing that he loves by how he treats us. John 13:2, and supper being ended, the devil having put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Last supper. Judas, the one that betrayed him, sold him out for 30 pieces of silver, sitting right there in the bunch. And Jesus got down and washed his feet. I'll tell you one thing, if it had been me, I would have done just what he did, if I was God, if I was him. But if it was me, I'd have said, Buster, you think I'm washing your feet? You got something else. You have got something coming. I ain't going to wash your feet. I may smack your face, but I ain't going to wash your feet. But Jesus loved even Judas and didn't just say it, showed it. He demonstrated it. I'm talking about the portrait of love. He didn't just say it, he showed it. He loved the unlovable. John 13:3, and Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, he knew he was getting ready to head to the cross. In just a few moments, he'd be heading down that path to the Garden of Gethsemane. He'd be crying out to his Father and his disciples. He knew would go to sleep, and he knew he was going to be arrested, and he knew the disciples would run, and he knew he was going to be arrested wrongly and tried unjustly, and he would be crucified. All of those thoughts, and the Father would turn his back on him. All those thoughts, all that he knew was coming, and still, he cared about those disciples enough to wash their feet. Oh my. By the way, could I remind you? They had been arguing about who was going to be the greatest. And Jesus, the Son of God, God in flesh, girded himself with a towel, got down on his knees in front of them and washed their feet. I'll tell you who was the greatest. He was. He showed his love. I'm talking about the portrait of love. He showed. You look at that portrait, you see the example of the person, the man, the woman, the family. And Jesus is our example. John 15:13, greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And that's what he did for us. 1 John 4:12, if we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. You know what Jesus said? When this world looks at you, they want to see a clean life. Well, now he said that, but that's not what I'm talking about. He said, when the world looks at you, they want to see somebody who walks faithfully with their God, the finances wisely. That's not what he said. He said, I want to show you the world. I want to show the world you. And when they look at you, I want you to have nice buildings to display my taking care of you. That ain't what he said. But he did say this. They'll know you are my disciples when they see your love one for another. That's what's important. That we love each other, but that we show to the world we love each other. How can we do that? Say it, I guess, but demonstrate it. Show it, not just say it. So my heart to talk a couple of services at least about love. It's been a footing message this evening. But I want to get into these verses a little bit, maybe a couple of messages. So my heart to get us to realize the importance of loving our God, loving each other, and loving lost people. A kind of love that shows it by how we live and how we treat each other and how we act. And he said it's more important than anything. And he said, without it, your life is a bunch of noise. Irritating noise, in fact. Let's stand together.